It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HRs, recruiters, and one actor as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. And today, Jeremy, we're going to be talking about building trust and respect, establishing credibility as a new leader. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and it's interesting doing the research and diving into some of the articles for today. It's really any leader, but it just happens to be that we're applying it to new leaders because some people, as we've talked about so many times, they find themselves in a leadership position and they have been in a leadership position for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, but still might be not feeling that comfortable about their particular leadership. Or they might have been promoted to a leadership position and been one of the, I really don't want to lead. I was happy where I was being an individual contributor. And we come across this more and more. I was having a conversation the other day with somebody in that particular situation. So we're talking about that establishing of the building and the trust and respect and establishing credibility. And it was weird during the pre-chat today, how we all came across some of the same research. And today we're going to focus on not a publication from Kuzes and Posner, who have, I used to say 40 years of research on leadership. So now it's probably more like 50 or plus years. So half a century of research in this particular domain. And they've gone absolutely global. The last time I checked, which was years and years ago, over 2 million people had taken their LPI, which is a leadership practices inventory. And they have done so much research and so many studies. An interesting article I found today that provides some of the ingredients of credibility as found by Kuzes and Posner, and also some of the 6 disciplines most practiced by leaders in building this credibility among people in their organization. It's I did share it in the chat, but that was earlier, and I'll have to reshare it so those of you who just joined us can access it. It's from Hemby, 2017, creating a leader credibility climate as modeled in the leadership of Jesus. So while we don't usually do, so it's from the Journal of Biblical, so many big words again, Journal of Biblical Perspectives and Leadership. While we're organizational psychology rather than theology, we'll look at this particular article. If you are interested in this, you can always go to the article and speak more of how Jesus emulated these particular characteristics. I found it as a really nice gem because what they did is they took the research from Kuzes and Posner and broke it down very specifically for things that leaders can use. And a quick start off, to think about this, and we always say, how can this be a type of a blueprint that an individual or an organization can use when moving forward with any kind of leadership development? So the 4 fundamental characteristics of a credible leader: honesty, forward-looking, inspiring, and competence. And when you look, the interesting thing is, as I alluded to before, these are competencies, things that leaders across the globe, that people appreciate no matter what country you're in, no matter what region of the world you're in, these are the things that were found as commonalities. So we talk about these in terms of, Kuzes and Posner talk about these as far as essential ingredients. Specifically from them, they say regardless of geography or culture. So we're looking at how do we really bridge this particular credibility gap. I won't get too deep into it right now, but there's plenty to share. But I did want to just read off the 6 disciplines that are most often practiced by leaders that are effective in building this trust. They are discovering yourself, appreciating constituents, affirming shared values, developing capacity, serving a purpose, and sustaining hope. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Tom. And
well, I just got a little question for you, Jeremy, because you kind of mentioned that this is great advice for new leaders or people who maybe have been in the position for a few years. But I can imagine, you know, someone my age, a little older, you know, who was a great manager 10 years ago, but now the world is changing. You know, I think this year they announced there's more millennials now in the workforce than baby boomers. So, you know, the whole sort of relationship that managers have to have with their employees is changing. So if I was the world's best manager 10 years ago, but now I'm finding out that I'm just not having the same relationship. And even though that list of things that you mentioned, if I was a manager from 10 or 15 years ago or got my training back then, I'm not sure many of those would actually be on my list. So is it time for even existing managers, those who have been at the top of their game, to revision what management or leadership looks like and to grasp onto some new skills for a new generation of the workforce?
I would say absolutely. But here's the thing. So while in the past 50 years, the needs and what people say is important to them and a leader hasn't really changed, because this is all based off of that leadership. And even when you look at a lot of the assessments out there, like these psychometric psychological assessments for promotion and for hiring and all that good stuff, like the really good ones that hold up in court, their definition of leadership sometimes is still in the old leadership. You know, it's not, it doesn't really embody the soft skills. And that's coming, but it's really that leadership of basically the actionable leadership in terms of getting results leadership. So the mindset is gradually changing and changing and changing. And it's really interesting, because we talk about the brand of IO psychology all the time, and it's starting to come to a tipping point where the skills that IO psychologists have and the things that we study, the things that are important to us, the things that we're passionate about, and the results that we get for organizations and the people in those organizations just happen to be aligning with what the workforce now, with the millennials, with their particular values. I don't think that's as much as a coincidence. I think that there's been this kind of background meshing in, because when you look at these, what's important, and I think everyone here agrees that these things are important, but you look at, you know, appreciating constituents, for example. So this one entails acquisition of trust from constituents who perceive that the leaders have their best interest at heart. Two major activities tend to help in accomplishing: appreciating diversity and communicating a sense of significance. I don't often use every, but I'd probably be stretching it to say that, well, I can't complete that good sentence. But let's put it this way. Who doesn't want a sense of significance? Who doesn't want their leader to communicate a sense of significance to them? And then, you know, going into it, affirming shared values, developing capacity, the purpose, the hope, right? We're hearing that from these generations that are up and coming. And again, big coincidence, right? It just so happens that these are the same things that have been important for people for the past 50 or 60 years. It goes back to what Dr. Patty said, Patricia Delgado, that the lap between research and the use of this research in the organizational settings is 15 to 17 years. So lots to unpack and unplug there, Tom.
Yeah, it looks like there are people wanting to unpack a few things. Let's go to Alexander.
Wonderful insights, Jeremy. And thank you, Tom. So I just came off of a situation this week where a company, over 400 employees, their previous CIO had just departed the company. They had only did one successful rollout. And I say successful, one rollout of any technology really in the last decade. And it was unsuccessful. It was very hard on the employees. This was a team that hadn't actually had to roll out anything though in the last decade. So this isn't surprising that they didn't have the skills and competence for it. There wasn't training for the new technologies on a workforce that didn't have any new technologies in the last decade. And so when we look at these skills and kind of where technology is especially heading now with AI, it's so important for these soft skills to be integrated in throughout the company. We have to be able to provide the skills to talk to people, to understand their needs, to help them feel comfortable with the changes. We're at a tipping point where so many changes are happening right now that we have to be able to be doing those things. We have to have leaders that can come in and be able to make people feel comfortable to talk with them, to make them understand where the company is going and that the company hopefully can survive, although that is up for debate. I think it was Deloitte who said that around almost half of leaders think in the next 10 years their companies won't be financially viable. So we are looking at a lot of changes in that, not only on the technology changes that are removing a lot of companies. We've now seen that with studies through COVID. A lot of the small, medium-sized companies that have the technologies, they're now going out of businesses due to the larger companies that had those technologies. We're also seeing the changes of the demographics from the ownership as baby boomers are exiting the companies. And so there's all these massive changes right now. And we really do have to be investing in these newer and younger managers. Like was just said, we have a lot more millennial managers in the office and millennial workers, and we do have to start understanding how these people are working.
If you don't mind me asking you, Alexander, you know, I'm always fascinated about, you know, working from home or the remote worker. How is that leadership maybe going to be a little bit different when you're incorporating so much technology into it? Good question.
It's a good question, and it's a difficult question for me because I have never not managed remotely. I've never actually managed an in-person team. So I started working remotely in 2015, 2014. Or sorry, not 2015. Yeah, 2015, 2014. I was thinking 2024. So yeah, it's been a very long time for me to not do that remotely. From what I talked to with people who have done it, it's really that they don't understand how to do the communication aspect of it. This is actually a very fascinating thing. Gartner just put out that by 2030, I think it was, they expect around 64% of people to be using AI to do character filters. And so it's kind of like a filter to make ourselves look prettier, but we're going to start using AI to make ourselves look better, to be able to communicate better. Part of that's rolling out, I think it's this quarter, where when we're doing these calls, our eyes will actually be automatically adjusted. So we always make eye focus with the person. Like I could be looking down here and it still kind of makes me look like I'm looking at you. So these new filters are going to be coming out to help us be able to communicate more kind of like we would in person through the internet. And that is expected to really be helpful for people. But it really does go into, we have to have these conversations of how do we get people to build cultures remotely. I think for people my age, we've kind of grown up with technology and friends that were on the internet. And so it's very natural to us, whereas somebody more your age, you didn't grow up with the technology as a teenager. And so it's a little bit harder to learn how to make those connections so strong. And so it's just, we have to have those communications and we have to really share our intergenerational differences, I think.
Yeah, and thanks for pointing that out, by the way. But yeah, I've got two daughters, both in their 20s. Their world has always had the internet, yeah. And they can't imagine a world before the internet. And it's becoming more of a fable than anything else. So thank you very much, Alexander. Natasha, let's go to you. Natasha, are you with us? All right.
I am.
Oh, you would there you
imagine.
Are.
Yeah, you would imagine 4 years into, well, post-COVID, and I'm still talking on mute. So yeah. So there's that. Hope everyone gets a good laugh out of that. But yeah, good afternoon, everyone. And so my comment is on the six disciplines. And, you know, something you just mentioned, Jeremy, about the sentiments or rules about the six disciplines have not really changed over the years. And I would like to add a little caveat to that statement in saying that I agree with you that it has not necessarily changed. However, we are now in an era of accountability that leaders have never been held to before. As you mentioned, majority of the workforce is millennials now, are millennials. And with the Gen Z now coming in full force, fired up and ready to go, we have a lot of younger people that are saying, hey, boomers, while we appreciate the various decades of experience, wisdom, and expertise that you bring. But there are ways to do this smarter, faster, and also introducing the human aspect, where we are now in an era where people want to have that work-life balance and so much more, and are saying, hey, while I dedicate these 40 plus hours to you a week, I need to also know, what do I get in return? Or you said this on Monday, and on Monday of last year, and here we are a year later with a failed rollout, as Alexander just mentioned. And we want answers as to why this failed. And in addition to the accountability that, you know, millennials and Gen Zers are holding the previous generations to, we also have more transparency as a result of technology. A lot of this information is easily found on the internet. In fact, as we recently saw with NPR this week, if anyone has been following, employees or individuals can take to the internet and literally explain or spew anything, which again, not only brings about accountability internally, but also accountability from the outer, you know, outer public, outside stakeholders, or anyone with a voice and does not necessarily have to be a stakeholder. And so with that accountability, I feel as though when leaders are unable to answer the why it failed, why it succeeded, why we did not do this, why are we choosing not to do that, it brings into question their credibility. Can you be trusted? And beyond the can you be trusted is, why should I trust you? Have you earned my trust? Can you earn my trust? And whether or not a leader can respond to that, or how a leader chooses to respond to that, that's where we see the credibility come into play. And I think that credibility and accountability kind of go hand in hand there.
Let me ask you, Natasha, because, you know, in the old paradigm of leadership, trust wasn't really a big issue. You know, no leader ever asked, do you trust me? Or no employee said, I trust my leadership, it seems to me. So as we're looking at the leadership challenges, is one of the key elements that trust factor?
I definitely do believe so. Because, I mean, when you say that the trust element was never there, because it didn't need to be there. As a Black woman, as I like to say, three-time immigrant, I am a woman, I'm sorry, a three-time minority. I am a woman, I am a Black woman, and I am a migrant to this country. In generally all three of those brackets, when you are either taking counsel from either parents or people within those same demographics, the first thing they say is, go to work, keep your head down, don't mess up your good job, your source of income, and your good benefits. Those were the criterias to being in the workplace, to being able to have a job. When we think about the Civil Rights Act, Title VII, how long it's been instituted, and a lot of these rights are still till this day being violated. Trust is not something that employers really needed to fight for, because they knew that everyone needs a job. And so now, with more rules around, more laws around, you know, labor laws that are coming about, well, not necessarily coming about, but are being more expansive to, you know, meet the growing demands, or the growing, blend of diverse workforce that we're seeing today, employers are now realizing that we have to earn the trust of our employees, because, as I mentioned earlier, at any given time, that information can be public. And at that point, we're not only responding to our internal stakeholders, but depending on the governance of the organization, outside stakeholders. And then the third layer of it might be anyone who has a voice, who has fingers, who has access to Twitter. And then lastly, the bots.
Thank you very much for that. Nick, let's go to you.
Yeah, I It's one of those things that I think we're finally starting to see the wave of, you know, societal change, the internet. You know, I was the kid who had the computer lab coming into the classroom as I was, you know, elementary, middle school. So I've lived on both sides of that divide. And just to see the long-term consequences, which are happening faster than all that, you see infrastructure changing with fiber optics and things like that, and how society's kind of wrapped itself around that. In the same way that we went from dirt roads to paved roads with the horse to the automobile. Probably not as drastic. I would caution, I always, my skin crawls a little bit when we get into the overhyped generational stereotypes. It's a place to start, and it's a way to understand how somebody might be viewing the world. But I think part of establishing your credibility is saying, how do you differ from the stereotype? Okay, you're a millennial, I can expect XYZ. Oh, you don't know how to use Excel, or, you know, you stayed off of social media, you know, okay, that's something different about you. You find those commonalities. And it's one of those things where it is disciplined, you know, to find yourself, to find your team, to find your voice. It doesn't happen in one day. Development is a long-term process. And so it just, to think about the disciplines that, you know, sound from kind of a standpoint of, it's just being a good human, like get to know yourself, get to know the people around you, figure out where you're going. And that's true in work, in home, in, you know, just polite society. And so I think that's where, you know, these things that go back to, you know, kind of a theological perspective, it stands the test of time and it manifests itself in so many different ways. Me getting to know myself might be, you know, going on a quiet retreat in the mountains or something like that, where somebody else has to talk to somebody. It's not a one size fits all, as we all are very familiar with, you know, it depends. So I think that it becomes very situational. How do you get to know your team? Well, you're going to draw different people out. You're going to take the time to be patient and reflective and really be present in the situation as well. And I think the longer you do that, the longer people see it, you know, credibility build slowly, but can be demolished in a moment.
Well, thank you very much for that, Nick. And yeah, you know, I'm 60 years old now. I'm on the young side of the baby boomers. But let me tell you, all those other people, especially those who are older than me, don't think the way I do. And I think they're all crazy. So yeah, stereotypes are wonderful to start with. Linda, let's go to you.
So from my perspective, and if you're looking at leadership the way it was 50 years ago, as someone had mentioned and so forth, from my perspective, I think leadership is back then was done at a more of a distance than it is now. And leadership now is a much more, or needs to be a much more personal, almost intimate kind of relationship with the people that you're leading. And that is going through, you know, what are your dreams? What are your goals? How are you going to help you get there? All the career planning piece of it. And how do you fit in? And what skills do you need in order to move forward? And things like that. And that wasn't really part of the conversation 50, 60, 70 years ago. And it was, you know, the skill set was, you know, are you making good strategic decisions? Are you making good financial decisions and things like that? It wasn't about, you know, how are you tempering your emotional response to something? And so I think that's part of the difference, in that it's a completely different way of approaching the humans that you're working with. And so there's that. Now, as a new leader, I think that you need to be clear with yourself about why were you given a leadership position, and also do a little bit of a self-inventory about what your true skill set is, and be a little vulnerable in saying, you know what, I really want this position or whatever, but I need to develop this skill and I need to get better at X, and acknowledge that. And in some places, at sometimes sharing that vulnerability, saying, you know what, I'm learning too, with whoever it is that you're working with. And then on the other thing that an organization can do to help new leaders, emerging leaders, is to have that solid construct for them to base their decisions and process on. Do you have really clear understanding of why you exist or your purpose? Do you have really clear, concise values and continually go back? Well, I'm talking to you about deadlines, because our value system is quality and communication, you know, those kinds of things. And you base it on that. So it's not always you making a decision about somebody. You're embodying the spirit of the organization as you develop as a leader.
Positively or negatively, you might reflect the organization. Thank you very much for that, Linda Ann. Rachel, welcome to Work Cookie. Let's go over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, actually, this is my first podcast as an IO practitioner. So I am kind of the new leader you're talking about in the IO section. I have leadership experience in other categories, but I joined CBOC as a student, and I benefited from actually Linda Ann's career coaching in multiple sessions, and actually one with you too, Tom. So this has been really fun to enter the work field and to see those great suggestions put into place. And one of the most valuable things I took away from my session with Linda Ann is that one of the biggest importance you can do is to focus on what the current leadership or organizational is experiencing, the gaps, and what value you can bring to it as a new leader. And what Natasha mentioned too is that credibility is so important. And I think you can't get to credibility as a new leader without listening a lot, without building relationships, establishing that rapport, and seeing how you can help meet their concerns, understand their needs, and offer solutions best. I know it isn't original. I'm sure it's been said and even referred to already, but leadership is more of a mindset than a label. You don't necessarily have to be in the senior leadership team to bring value to an organization or a team. So that's all I wanted to say there.
Well, thank you very much. And boy, if you want someone to listen to, Dr. Martha, let's go to you.
Thank you, Tom. I think it's important to remember that whether we're talking about new leaders or managers or those who have been established in that position, we all have the responsibility of ongoing education and self-improvement and forward movement. But as easy as it is to say that, and as easy as it is to put that responsibility on the individual, we have to remember that the organization plays a big part in it. There are some people who are very much going to be proactive. And if the organization behind them isn't really behind them, they will take whatever steps necessary to grow and move forward as a leader, to develop so that their skills, including those soft skills, will continue to grow so that they have what it takes to be effective in their roles. But not everybody is like that. So we can't let the organizations off the hook. You can't just hire someone for a leadership position or promote someone to a leadership position and have it be the equivalent of pushing them into the deep end of the pool and saying good luck to them, right? Because they are, in some sense, representing the organization. Why wouldn't you want to partner with them, right? It doesn't mean that you are undermining their skills. It doesn't mean that you're not allowing them the autonomy as a leader, but you have to be there to support them in their own growth and development. And especially if you look at people in that middle management position, boy, you get accosted from every side possible. There are times or situations where you just can't do anything right, right? You're ticking off people on every end. So an organization really has to step up. It goes so far beyond just appointing people to positions and assuming that they will take whatever actions necessary to make sure that they are doing a good job and only take some time to do an annual review that we talked about not too long ago to maybe tell them what they're doing wrong. But we really have to come together between leadership and the organization. It can't all just be laid on the doorstep of the leader, new or experienced, and have them expected to do it all by themselves and do it right, especially in such a working experience that we have today. The changes are so quick, and we have such a wide variety of individuals in the workforce, which can, if we were to harvest that appropriately with the right intentions, that could be so productive and so beneficial and so beautiful. But if no care is taken to teach someone how to do that, we can't expect things to work smoothly.
Let me ask you this, because as we've been having the discussion today, one of the things that's come into my mind is, are organizations, even those that do a lot of training, are employees suffering a little bit of workshop burnout? And is there any benefit with, you know, a lot of the experience I've had with other organizations in the past is, you know, we've got an issue, maybe it's leadership, we're going to come in, we're going to bring somebody in, they're going to do a 3-hour workshop on leadership, and then, you know, the C-suite expects things to improve. And there's a lot of those sort of, yeah, we're doing a 1-day or we're doing a 3 hours and then problem solved. When, you know, that's not the way people learn for the most part. It's got to be more long-term than that. So do we also need to look at how we're doing training and maybe develop a new model for it?
Absolutely. It's kind of like the meetings that we've had, those conversations too, right? There's just so many meetings every single day that people can't get anything done. And it's a similar thing with training, too much training that may not be engaging, training that may not be relevant, training that may not be necessary for every single person who is forced to attend. So there actually has to be a complete revamping, I believe, of what organizations do in terms of training. Are there certain trainings that everybody should have? Yes, absolutely. But why force people who don't need specific trainings to sit through them? And why force people to sit through trainings that put you to sleep and whatever was taught is never utilized in their day-to-day working experience? This is where leadership isn't limited to those in the C-suite. This is every middle manager, this is every team leader, people who know their employees, people who know the individuals on their teams, and people who know what the employee actually does day in and day out at that organization. Because how many times we see decisions being made at a level so far removed that nobody making the decision knows what goes on in the proverbial trenches. So just like the situation with too many meetings and nobody can get anything done, you can absolutely have too many trainings that are irrelevant and time wasters and money wasters for the organization.
Yes, yes, you can. Thank you very much for that. Alexander, let's go to you.
I am going to kind of piggyback off of your question, Tom, which was about trust. Trust is a fascinating one, and it's something that is coming up more and more within technology. I'm going to post some links here. We have a lot of money right now being spent, almost $100 billion every year, just to fight misinformation for companies. And that's expected to grow by 2028 to almost $500 billion. It's expected to eat up almost half of the marketing and the cybersecurity budget. So when we start thinking about trust and then we add in misinformation, or part of it is information that is true, but it's taken out of context, there's a lot of looking at that because that's really becoming such a challenge right now. The last time I priced it, and this is where it becomes really hard regulatory and leasing wise. For mine, when I looked it up, it was in London. There's little SEO experts who will pop up little websites for like a week, and you can pay them $300 and you can have a campaign put out to, you know, target someone that you don't like, essentially, or a business. And they'll pop up websites, they'll have news articles, it'll pop up in, you know, the Google search feed. And it's not that much to actually do those campaigns. But it costs a lot of money for the victims, right? Or the organizations to fight these campaigns. And AI is only exacerbating that because now we can pop up websites with chat prompts almost. And the technology is being more developed there and it's only getting better with time. And so when we start looking at the trust side of it, yeah, trust is really important. But who do we trust now? That becomes such a big question on a psychological side, on a business side. We could have a month of that topic alone. There's no real quick answer to this, but it's such a fascinating question that I just had to mention it. I loved your question, Tom, essentially.
Well, thank you very much. And Jeremy, maybe we should have Trust Month as one of our themes. Nick, let's go over to you.
Well, a couple of things that jumped out.
You know, we talk about this new paradigm of leadership, and I wrestle a little bit with that because I think what's happened is good leaders had it, quote unquote, and you know, there weren't terms, there weren't definitions, and that was underlying all these business metrics and all the, you know, the outward facing things. But then we started to dive in what's between the ears, what's in the heart of a good leader, and now we have more terms and everything like that to define it. So we have more definitions of what it is. And I hope we don't, you know, do a complete 180, because there still needs to be productivity measures. And are you getting your team in line? Do you have, you know, can you influence their decisions to get their work done? And I think part of that is just kind of the focus of what's authority. You know, you've seen people trust institutions less and less. And that's, you know, amplified by the fact that everybody has access. You know, you can have a smartphone and you could launch a revolution. And it's, you know, with the misinformation that Alexander was talking about, it's there. And I think the skills that we'll need to see are going to be media literacy, deciphering human generated versus computer generated, really getting to the idea of what is truth, what is fact, what is opinion, and how to separate and navigate all of those things.
Do you think, you know, especially in this world that we're developing, that, you know, and I'm always going to back to communication skills, but aren't communication skills going to be like the number one thing you're going to need to have?
I mean, yeah, connecting two people when, you know, it's even more imperative because there's other voices that sound just a little, you know, a little flat or sharp because they're AI voices or anything like that.
Yeah.
Again, that's where that media literacy, Paul, please be quiet. You know, it becomes that much more that you can decipher that you can see what's going on. And yeah, but I think the way in which we teach them the focus of communication is going to broaden. You know, how do you communicate via web chat? How do you communicate via text message? Because, you know, there's no subtext in text, and people will make up their own story in the absence of information. So there's a lot of nuance that I think is always kind of what we hold on to in communication, and that can't be faked by a computer just yet.
No, and at some point, talk to Jeremy and get those negotiation skills. They'll help you out a lot. Natasha, over to you.
Hi. Yeah, I guess I want to continue on this trust train. And Gartner put out survey results that they did on trust. And I believe in, we're 2024, 2022, where 21% of employees claim to trust their organization. Only 21% of employees trust their organization. And I would be very curious to know what those numbers look like in the 2023 surveys, simply because one thing that we understand is, especially with a lot of the layoffs that were taking place over the years from big tech to smaller organizations, what have you, one of the repetitive or running themes that we hear are employers who use reduction of force to supplement or make up for their financial numbers, where their numbers not being where they would have wanted to. And as a result, a lot of employees have lost trust in their employers, where you have an all staff one day where they say, we do not foresee any layoffs. Then 3 weeks later, we announce a mass layoff, right? And I feel as though when we think about trust, we have to look at trust from a layer factor. I can trust that if I come to work and do my job, I will receive the salary that comes along with me doing my job, because that's what we agreed upon at the start of this work agreement. My labor for your payment. Then we have the layer of, but can I trust you to develop me, as Dr. Martha mentioned earlier? Do I trust you to care about my development? Do I trust you to acknowledge my great work, promote me? Do I trust you to enough to share with you that I have a disability and not feel that down the line you might retaliate against me as a result of? And I think that when we discuss trust, we might need to really unpack it a little bit deeper to understand how exactly do I want our employees to trust us? What does trust mean to us? And then understand whether or not our employees can trust us in that manner. And I think that, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, quickly looking at my notes, a lot of employers have really demonstrated that, you know, their priority is performance over people. We want the numbers, but we're not going to invest in what will get us those numbers. And a lot of that is demonstrated by way of the reductions of force, by way of the cuts of DE&I, learning and development, human resources divisions that generally are the vehicles through which a lot of these trainings and programmings come from. And lastly, I think opposite of trust, well, not opposite of trust, but along the lines of trust, when we were discussing, I believe, was it the, not the disciplines, was it the disciplines? It was not the six disciplines, but Dr. Jeremy, you talked about, you know, leaders who are forward thinking generally are most trusted. I have seen a lot of organizations, a lot of leaders lose the trust of their employees because they are so forward thinking that they do not take the time to acknowledge and take accountability for where the organization is in this moment. And I believe that in order for a lot of leaders to take their division to higher heights, to move forward, you need to understand the past to have a better understanding of where you are now and how to move from where you are now to wherever heights you need to go to. And a lot of leaders want to move forward and just say, let's forget the past, without acknowledging, allowing time to heal, allowing time to fix or to strategize on how do we fix what is broken in order to move forward, or how can we move forward as we fix what is being broken. And I think it was Alexander who mentioned the communication piece being very important to that, is that in addition to communicating what the plan is, you have to communicate the timeline, but also leave space and room for people to understand what is being communicated, digest it, ask questions, offer rebuttals, but also, again, acknowledge that this is the path going forward, and still be able to have, you know, those dynamic conversations at every step of the way.
Well, thank you very much for that. And before we go to you, Linda Ann, Rich, I see you are now at the conference. Do you want to unmute your mic and say a few words to us about what's going on?
Well, can you hear me now?
I can.
Okay, good. Yeah, I just showed up here. Yesterday we had the plenary session. Today, learning all day long. So there are some workshops here on leadership. And if there's anything to report, I'll let you guys know the next time I see you.
Thank you very much. That's Rich, our man in the field.
Yeah. Rich, are you able to make it through the, are you heading over to the CBOC meetup?
I am.
Okay.
I'm on my way.
Yeah, if you get there in time, feel free to turn your camera on. We'll say hi to some people over there. For the audience on the podcast listening, Rich is at the SIOP conference in Chicago right now, reporting live.
CBOC is on the road. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
There's Aaron. Look at that. All right. Sorry, go ahead, Linda Ann. We're seeing some of our friends here.
Just in response to what Natasha had to say in describing how some of the leaders are feeling about the process of moving forward, whether they're making cuts or they have a mindset of being too far in the future, that they're not paying attention to the current time, it's really important for leaders to understand they aren't getting anywhere without the people that they lead. And if you're not paying attention to how you make the people that you lead effective at the process, then nobody's going to succeed, right? And so that's my philosophy when I work with companies, is that if you don't see your employees as the most important component, then I'm not going to work with you, because if you don't see them as the most important component, try doing it without them. So that's my sassy attitude on that topic. I think it's important for us to also look at the expectations that Gen Zs and millennials have of organizations and leaders, right? And it's a little different in some ways, just because it's more verbal, right? We are in a process of asking people's opinion more, and what do you want, and those kinds of things, you know. And what I've heard as feedback from others is, well, Gen Zs especially, and whatever, they have these expectations that they should move up quickly and not put in the work and all those kinds of things. And when I reflect back as to who I was when I graduated college, and I'm a boomer, when I graduated, I thought by 25, I should be the vice president of something. And how I was going to do that as an educator, I really don't know. But I remember doing a complete reflection at 25 going, oh, I might need to adjust the time frame on this. And so when I work with, like I'm working with an emerging leader right now who had that kind of, well, I'm crushing the deadlines. I want a leadership position, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He was given the opportunity with a very challenging individual to do project management with her and have her work with him. And he was given the opportunity to fail at it. I mean, he had support, he had education and whatever. And so I've been coaching him, but he's struggled in many ways. And so I had this conversation yesterday with him, and that was, you were given the opportunity to fail and help and now reflect and understand how different you are and what your understanding is about why you're not ready for that position you thought you were ready for. And what his response was, yeah, if I hadn't experienced this and had not been given this opportunity, I probably would have thought, well, let me see if I can find it somewhere else. And now he's there's a different level of vulnerability and humility in, oh, this is how I need to approach getting my skill set together. And so it just takes some time to do that. We're humans and we don't learn by, you know, just dictating to something to us.
Thank you very much for that. Alexander, back to you.
I am going to now piggyback off of Natasha's and loop this in with the trust back to new leadership. This is something that I teach to organizations, but also when I advise other CIOs, especially here in the US, which is about that trust part. When we take jobs, we expect to be able to exchange our time for a steady paycheck. We do want to kind of have a expectation that we're going to have stability in our lives for that. That's why you're doing that. If you didn't want stability, you'd probably start your own company. When we look at this from an IT perspective on building that trust, we have to remember that so many young people today have grown up in schools that are very high targets for cybersecurity. I forget the exact placement. It's within the top 10, possibly the top 5. These are schools that have experienced ransomware attacks, and we're talking population sizes of students that are comparable to some large metropolitan cities, because they are for large metropolitan cities. And there's always one article I share. It's a Forbes article, and it's titled, Chromebooks Are Safe, Windows Devices Still Affected by Ransomware. And so when we look at this, we've had a generation of students who have grown up realizing, hey, there is Chromebooks that haven't had ransomware ever to date so far, according to databases internationally and nationally. And when we look at the current situations, we just had last month and actually last Friday, Department of Homeland Security reports, Microsoft doesn't really know how or if Russia and China are still in there. Russia's been reading Microsoft's executives' emails. When people were submitting support tickets, they were reading the support ticket emails, getting login credentials, and then trying to get into those companies' informations and systems. And these students know that. And so when they start looking at these jobs, they report, yes, that does factor into them because they don't view it as stable. They don't view it as a trustworthy system. And so now we have to teach our management and our companies to not only have good technology and hygiene, cyber practices, but how do we communicate this to the not only existing workforce, but the workforce we want to recruit, that we have listened, we've learned, we have systems in place that are going to protect you. Because of the school system, we have a lot of stuff. Los Angeles School District, it was only released after a journalist did an article on it, but thousands of students' mental health evaluations were being sold online. And there's a very big, real difference in this. There was a recent study where younger people are exponentially higher in their fear of their personal information being leaked. It's a very real fear for them. And so when we look at these systems, how can we build that trust?
Thank you very much. And that's a great question. I don't have an answer. But before we go to you, Dr. Martha, Rich, do you want to introduce and say hello to a few people there? Oh, Rich might not be listening to us.
Looks like we just lost him, but we were able to see, we saw Lee, we saw Destiny, we saw Maria Valles there. So when Rich pops back on, we'll maybe we can cut to him and say hi to everyone.
It's great. Now we all wish we were there. Dr. Martha, let's go to you.
Well, first, just to what Linda Ann was saying, if I had a dollar for every customer service position candidate I've ever interviewed who expected to run the company in 6 months, I'd be retired. But going back to the forward-thinking leader, what Natasha and Linda Ann were speaking to, it is important for leadership to be forward-thinking, absolutely, because this is how companies are able to survive and thrive into the future and compete. But I have seen forward-thinking leaders who become distracted by every shiny new object that crosses their path, whether or not it's relevant, whether or not it works for their organization and their employees, and they continue to bombard the employees with these new ideas to a degree where it becomes a joke. And so when they do provide a valid idea that could be helpful to the organization and the experience within it, people just roll their eyes because, again, the leader has lost their trust. If you are distracted by every squirrel that crosses the road and every shiny object, you no longer come across as that trusted, it goes back to trust in that sense, as that trusted evaluator of what could be good for our company and the employees in surviving and thriving and moving forward and competing appropriately and effectively. So yes, forward movement and growth are critical, but you have to, as a leader, pay attention that you don't become that guy. And an organization, again, I keep putting it onto the organization as well, because you cannot just hold one individual responsible for anything and everything. They're part of the organization. The organization has to have some kind of checks and balances, and they need to know what's going on. So if there's a leader who's just going after anything and everything that's shiny and new without anyone tempering it and giving feedback on it, that's a potential of things kind of going off the rails.
Yeah, that's a great time to bring in an IO psychologist to help you navigate what you should and shouldn't be doing. Hire an IO. Nick, over to you.
Yeah, I think we talk about trust and different tools and things like that. And I think there's obviously a benefit for early adoption as you get the new shiny research or the new shiny security tool or whatever it is that impacts your business decisions going forward. But at some point, you've got to, as a leader, decide, am I going to stick with it and see it out and get some longevity with it? Or, you know, after 3 months, if we decided it's not working, there's so much that's on demand, instant, and you take that and mix it with the bravado of youth, of I'm going to be, you know, going from call agent to CEO in 6 months, then there's a lot of kind of shifting attentions, a little bit of ADD where it's like, oh this thing works. Well, yeah, they can both be true, but what works for your organization, what works for your system, what are you going to adopt, and do you have the discipline to know what works for you and your team and protect that instead of chasing every new trend? And I think Dr. Martha did a great job of kind of saying that's one of the risks of the on-demand society, of forgetting that it's people, forgetting that even people who design the trainings or leadership things may not have the whole picture, or it's very situational. And, you know, it's the joke, it depends, but it does really. And if we have, you know, competing theories and two groups hold on to it for a long enough time where we can actually make a comparison, we can find those things that are better and best as we keep moving forward.
Thank you very much for that, Nick. Natasha, back to you.
Yes, thank you so much. And I think, you know, to Dr. Martha's point, and I would say that I'm not saying that leaders should not be forward thinking, because you do have to forecast if you want to remain competitive in any marketplace and think that expansively. But what we're saying here is there has to be balance between being forward thinking, acknowledging what has happened in the past to reach us, that got us to where we are, and strategically move forward. And I think that, you know, a lot of leaders, and especially those who tend to latch on to every shiny, you know, new item or to-do that comes up as best industry practice, yay, is truly you have to understand the history of your organization, the people you lead. What are the residuals of previous administrations? Because through that, and by integrating the people, as Linda Ann mentioned us, you can only get that feedback from people, not just your executives, but people at all levels within the organization. And it's at that time, once you have that history, that you're able to understand which of these, I mean, have strategy around, okay, that is fun and dandy, but for the purpose of our organization, the industry, the work that we do, that might not work here. Or also, it's completely different from what this organization has historically done, and it could work, but how do I get to know the key players involved and all of our stakeholders to understand the best strategy into implementing that with that within our organization? And at that point, I wouldn't necessarily label it an early adaptation, but rather I would call it a right and rightly adopted strategy, meaning it is right for our organization. And because we strategized the right way by involving the right people, by understanding what would it take for this to come here, what would work against us if we bring it here, and how do we, you know, how do we work on the obstacles in order to make that happen? And so really understand how susceptible your organization is to accept, you know, those changes, and, you know, work, strategize closely with the with the areas or people where you know that you will receive pushback. And I think to close out the trust matter on my end, I want to share real quickly, and it's not verbatim, a quote that I read not too long ago, and I thought, my God. So it says that it said something along the lines that organizations want employees to trust them and be loyal to them when these kids, speaking mostly of millennials and Gen Z, when these kids grew up watching their parents be laid off and mistreated by the very same organizations that are now demanding their trust.
Good point.
So, you know, again, I think that as we continue to discuss trust, and it goes back to really understanding the history of your organization, is to understand with a lot of boomers leaving the workforce, going back to the conversation that we had about how organizations have been led in the last 50 years, it's very important for leaders to also understand what are the, you know, what are the negative and aftershocks and after effects of a former, you know, bad executive's leadership. What are the residuals that this person is leaving behind? And where do we have that make room for, you know, acknowledging, accepting, but also healing and moving forward, rather than just saying new leadership and onward, upward with whatever it is that I roll out.
Thank you very much, Natasha. Linda Ann, last word goes to you.
Thanks, Tom. Just to get back for a minute to shiny object syndrome, and to what Dr. Martha had to say. I've worked in organizations like that, and the eye rolling is really happens frequently when those are expressed, and you know, it's just called shiny object syndrome, and we would dismiss whatever was being said because we knew it was just this week's flavor of the week, right? And but it's really serious because, you know, in previous conversations we've had, you know, there was talk of, you know, what about employers having employee housing and things like that? And the downfall on that is, does that company really want to be in the real estate business? And how much can that can distract from the success of the organization? So when you go down that shiny object syndrome road, you have to really understand how much that's deflecting focus and time and resources from what you have expressed previously as the direction and purpose and of the organization and the strategies, so forth. So it really causes leaders, other leaders within the organization, to take their eye off the ball. So as a top leader who would have that influence, you really do need, while it's important to stay up on trends, you really need to make sure that trend is aligned with where you want to go.
And with that, Jeremy, we have come to the end of another Work Cookie.
We sure have. And I put in the chat, and it's also will be in the show notes if you've got the podcast up. It's a nice blueprint for some leadership credibility, development competencies, attributes, and behaviors. It's an article, Building Leadership Credibility Guidance, drawn from literature. It's a nice blueprint. We talk about that all the time. So if you're a new manager starting out or a manager looking to increase, those are some competencies. Or even if you're looking to build a leadership development program. We've got, you can go to cboc.com/events. There's tons of events. We had our first Midwest US regional meetup recently, and those will be done every 2 months. And we've got Salt Lake City, Rocky Mountain, student meetups, expert meetups, all kinds of stuff going on there. And as a reminder, if you're listening to the podcast, these are open mic. Come and share your ideas. Tom.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. And yes, please join us. We're here live Thursdays, 12 noon Eastern. Just come on and share your voice and share your thoughts with us and join the conversation. And with that, Jeremy, I think it's time to count out, and we'll see everyone back here in 1 week's time.
Thank you so much, everyone. Counting out in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at cboc.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At cboc.com.